got started playing, and then in high school, I played in an outfield in high school, and I don't know how I ever got started pitching on the mound, but when I, after I got started, it was much better because I was in shape all the time.
So you didn't start pitching until high school?
Until high school. I pitched 3 years in high school. And then from high school, I had a couple tryouts at Detroit when I was in high school. And then when I graduated, they sent me to Evansville in the 3I League. And I stayed until the season started, and then I got released. I came home, and I still kept playing semi-pro ball. So Del Drake, a gentleman here in Finley that played with Detroit in 1911, asked me if I'd like to try it again, and he got me a contract with the St. Louis Browns, and they sent me to Topeka, Kansas in the Western League. And I stayed all year and had a pretty good year, 9-7. I won 9 and lost 7, and I thought that was pretty good. I wouldn't be surprised if today that'd be make me a millionaire right there.
Sure.
But I was getting $200 a month.
$200, not $200,000.
$200, but it's amazing. Back then, we'd go on a road trip. We'd be given $2 a day to eat on. And you could eat 3 good meals a day on $2, and I'd have enough to get a haircut and a cab fare to the ballpark. Many a day I'd go on a road trip, wouldn't have a penny in my pocket, because maybe we were going away for 10 days, they'd give us a $20 bill. That was plenty. And that year, I was paid $1,000, $200 a month, 5 months, $1,000. I had to pay board and room, I wasn't married, and I came home with enough and paid cash for a new Ford. So you can see the difference in money then and it is today.
Did you like traveling around in the Western League?
Did I like? Oh, very. Yeah, I enjoyed it all the time. No matter how we went, because back in those days it was a sport. Mm-hmm. We loved it. We lived it.
Did you play every day?
Yep, just as, the same as they do today. Doubleheaders on Sunday.
Were you playing all day games?
No. Played mostly night games in the minor leagues. Yeah.
Did you travel by train most of the time?
Yeah. After, of course, in the Texas League and the Western League, we had maybe a short jump. We'd take a bus. But we most generally traveled by Pullman. And when I was at Brooklyn, we made 2 trips by airplane. And I told Leo one day, I said, no way. I said, if this is going to be it, let me go. Because I didn't like airplanes at all.
How many boys like you were there on the team in the minor leagues? How many of
20.
You? 20?
20, yeah.
20?
Yeah.
And how many coaches?
Might say just one.
Just one?
Yeah, because I've coached at baseline many and many a day. So you see, they didn't have any coaches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What'd you do in your spare time in the minor leagues?
Well, I don't know. Mostly, I wasn't the type of guy to run around. And I spent most of my time in the hotel. If I wasn't out at the ballpark, I was in the hotel.
Did you get together and talk about baseball with the other guys?
Oh, at times, yeah. Maybe we'd go over the other teams. Somebody on the other team, we were getting ready to play. and we just talk about how you're going to pitch him or how you're going to play him or something like that.
What year was that when you were...
1930.
1930? 1930. What did your family think about you playing professional ball?
They loved it.
Did they?
Oh, bless their hearts. All of them was for me all the way. All the way. My mother, the year that I got released, my first year... I came home, of course, when I got in the house, I was crying. And she said, never mind. She said, I'm glad you're home. So they were with me all the way.
Now, where'd you go from there?
From there, from Topeka to the Texas League, with Wichita Falls in the Texas League. And I was there 2 years.
How'd you do?
I won 15 ball games down there. I never only got to go to Milwaukee and the American Association. So you can see where a guy today, where I would have been 6 years before I went to the majors. I'd have been in the major leagues.
When did you get to Milwaukee then?
I went to Milwaukee in 33 up to 37, including 37. Mm-hmm. And I had some good seasons in Milwaukee and never got a chance to go to the majors.
Well, your best year was probably 1936?
36 was probably the best year I had in baseball. Mm-hmm. But I like to talk about that year because it was so great to play ball and have the season that you have. I won 19 during the playing season. I won one in the playoff and won three in the Little World Series.
Who'd you play in the World Series?
Buffalo, in the International League, yeah.
Tell us about the Little World Series.
Well, I was the head pitcher on the ball club all year. I never got to start a game in the Little World Series until the last game. The first two ball games, I relieved. Al told me to go to the bullpen, and I relieved the first two games. I got credit for both of them, but I never got into a ball game till the last one. And then Al started me the last one and told me to go as hard and as fast as I possibly could. He said he had Lou Hamlin in the bullpen, fastball pitcher. Said he'll be ready, he'll come and get you. So I went as far as the seventh inning. And after the, I got in a little trouble, and he didn't wait. He had him ready, and he brought him right in, and we won it, and won the Little World Series.
Who was your manager then?
Al Southern. He used to be a great pitcher with the Cardinals, I believe.
Did you get along well with Al?
I got along with everybody, no kidding. I just didn't have any trouble with them.
Who were your favorite teammates on that team?
On the Milwaukee ball team? Well, I'd say Lynn Storti. Lynn Storti, he was our second baseman. And at that time, Kenny Kelker was a third baseman. And Ted Gulick.
How'd you get along with the owners?
Very well. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You didn't see much of them. You had no trouble with them at all. The only trouble we had back in Milwaukee, one day they didn't pay us when it was payday. And we kind of went on a strike. We wouldn't go onto the field until we got our money. And we were only making probably $350 a payday. But they were short of money, as everybody was back in the 30s. But that's the only time that we ever had any trouble with that.
Who were the owners of the team? Do you remember them?
Mr. Bendinger. Bendinger, he was a great big lawyer. He and Al Southern, the manager, owned the ball club. I think that is the main reason that I never got to the majors. They wouldn't sell me. They've told me outright, said, we can't. They were offered $25,000 for me by the Yankees, and they wouldn't let me go because he said we'd have to go pay $20 or $25 for somebody else, and we know what you can do. So I often think that that is the reason I never got to go to the majors before I did.
Were you dying to get to the majors?
Oh, no, not really. No. I had played so much minor league ball, and I was just satisfied. I was living good. I came home here. I paid $3,000 for this home. So today it's appraised at $80,000. So you see the difference in the money.
Then, after the 36th season, you had a good year in 1937.
Oh, I think I went back and won 18 more. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether they took pity on me or what, but they let me go.
Now, while you were in Milwaukee, they gave you a special award.
Oh, yeah. They gave me a lot of stuff, but one night they had a festival night. And the fans presented me with a big old Oldsmobile sedan. And the back end of that car, I mean, was loaded with gifts from other fans in the city. They loved me up in Milwaukee. I'd often told people that If I'd have wanted to, I believe I could have become mayor of Milwaukee at that time.
What year was that that gave you the car?
37, after my good year in 36. I guess they figured that I deserved a night.
That's great. Then you made your major league debut in 1938.
38, I went to Brooklyn, yeah.
Tell us about your first game, or your first experience.
The first game I pitched in Brooklyn in 1938 was I pitched a shutout against Philadelphia in the smallest ballpark that major leagues was ever played in, the Baker Bowl. I mean, I've seen infielders go back and catch fly balls and go over that fence. And it never worried me. Never thought the guys used to say, "Now, you didn't think anything about their short field, did you?" I said, "No." He said, "You will start thinking about them, and then you'll get in trouble."
Did you like pitching at the Baker Bowl?
That's the only time I ever pitched in the Baker Bowl. Matter of fact, after that first game, they quit playing in the Baker Bowl and moved over to Shive Park. I think the Shive Park was the best looking major league park outside of Chicago in the business. It was beautiful. The infield was so rounded. If you'd sit in your dugout, all you could see was the outfielder's head. From here up, the infield just sloped just perfect, you know. Casey Stengel said one time they sitting in the third base dugout. I think it was Babe Herman that got a double, and he going from first to second, he disappeared. Oh, Casey couldn't get over it. He didn't know where he went to, but he fell down. He fell down and he was laying there flat. You couldn't see him at all. Now that's how oval that was. But I love the Shive Park to pitch in. But I think my favorite park in the National League was the Polo Grounds. It was the same type of park that I pitched in Milwaukee. Short fields at the fence, short, but it went out quick. And all you had to do was pitch through the middle and they hit to the center, to the big part of the field. I like those very much.
Well, who did you have in center field when you were pitching for Brooklyn? Who was your center fielder?
Dixie Walker. Great, great ball player. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you like pitching at Ebbets Field?
I didn't mind it. The fences were far enough away. If the guy hit one, he deserved it. Yeah. But I didn't like the Baker Bowl, that the guy hit a little pop fly and it'd go over the fence.
How about Forbes Field?
Forbes Field, the only thing with Forbes Field that I didn't like was from home plate to the grandstand. It was so far back that if a ball would get by the catcher, man could score from second base very easily.
Did you try to throw less knuckleballs when you were...
Yeah, you had to be careful, especially if you had men on in scoring position. You had to be careful and not... You just couldn't... go along if the catcher was going to catch it. And you couldn't blame me because I'm telling you, it really cuts out.
How about Wrigley Field?
Wrigley?
Wrigley in Chicago.
Oh.
Is that a good place
prettiest,
to play?
The prettiest park I ever saw. It is today. You can go into Wrigley Field and sit any place and you can see a ball game. And no signs on the fences, the green growing up there, you know, and yeah, I loved Wrigley Field very much. It was funny. Before a ball game, I'd always get out of the dugout, run clear around the park. That was my little exercise. And there was a gentleman always sitting in center field, blind. And I don't know how he knew it, but when I'd run past, he'd say, "You're looking good, Todd."
Now, how do you know?
I don't know. And he was all alone. But the poor guy, they claimed him, he could tell you by the head of the ball on the bat where that ball was going.
Great thing.
Yes, sir. They're wonderful things to think about. I sit there at night, and you can't imagine how far back I go. I can go clear back to 1930 and name every guy on the ball club. I can see him just as plain.
Do you have any memories of CrossFit Field?
Crosley Field? Oh, yeah, I love Crosley Field. I loved to go there because I had so many fans that were real good fans. I enjoyed playing there very much. Matter of fact, they tried to get Dave Phelps and I. They wanted to trade Ernie Lombardi and Grissom for Dave Phelps and I. The year they won the pennant, and Brooklyn wouldn't go. And that's how close I come to getting in a World Series. But Jimmy Wilson was over there then, and he liked me very much. I had beaten him a couple times, and they'll try to pick up a pitcher if he beats them, just to keep him away from them. But I never got a chance to go. When I was sold from Brooklyn to Chicago, Jimmy was manager. And I went to Catalina Islands 2 weeks ahead of time just to talk to Jim. And I went to him and I said, Jim, why in the world did you ever buy me? Well, you've got 10 good pitchers. He said, I like you. Now, isn't that something? I like you. And he told me several times, he said, I want you to learn, study how I coach, because someday you'll be a coach on my ball club. Poor old Jim died.
Do you wish you'd have had that opportunity?
I always wanted to be a coach. I didn't care about ever being a manager, but just a coach on a good ball club.
Were you disappointed when you didn't get to Cincinnati, when you had you were traded twice in a season, twice in the offseason?
I don't understand.
When you almost became a Cincinnati Red, were you disappointed?
Oh, very much. Yeah, very much. There was nothing I could do about it. Back then, you had nothing to say about it.
How about any umpires? Do you remember any good ones or any bad ones?
I remember quite a few of them, and there was Bill Clem. Do you remember Bill Clem? The first game I pitched in Brooklyn, he always had the reputation of not missing a strike. Maybe you've heard that. Well, he missed one on me, and I just turned my back on him and walked back to the mound. When I went up to bat, he said, young man, don't ever do that to old Bill again. He knew when I turned my back that I wasn't satisfied with that strike he called. But there was several of those boys that they were all good to me. I'm very good. They'd give me close plays because I never give them any trouble. Never argue with them or fight with them like they do today. And they'd make it up to you.
Now, you even went out on the town with umpires now.
Oh, yeah. We weren't supposed to. I suppose that's the same way it is today. But there was two or three of them, and every night he'd go out one door and I'd go out the other, and we'd meet and we'd go to a show. But they were all nice.
Who were your favorite teammates over the years, with Brooklyn or with Chicago?
I had some good ones. Claude Passo was one. Kai Kyler was another one. Poor Claude and Kai, they had engaged me for the next road trip. It was amazing because poor old Claude, when he didn't have me, he had Jimmy Fox. And Jimmy Fox lived like a hog. I don't know whether I should have said that or not, but he smoked these big cigars. His room smelled like a bar. You couldn't breathe in his room for smoking cigars. But old Claude, he'd always try to get me to go, you know, because we've had maids in the hotel. When we were with Kyler and Claude, they'd tell us, said, you're two of the cleanest men on this ball club. Said, we don't have anything to do when we go in the room. But that's the way we lived. We didn't drink. We didn't trouse around. We ate and went back and went to bed. If I'd go to bed early, I'd leave the bathroom light lit. My roommate would come in, wouldn't turn on a light. He'd just go in, real tiptoe around, go to bed. In the morning, I'd get up early. I'd do the same thing, real quiet, sneak out. And you just get along so much better that way.
Were there any of your teammates that were characters?
Oh, several of them, yeah. That, just like that George Soucy that they got for me in Milwaukee when they bought for Cleveland to help catch my knuckleball. Now, he was a character.
What'd he do?
Well, he used to go down in the bullpen and every day and sit and tell me how many taverns he stopped in on the way home from the ballpark.
And there were quite a few in Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I had two or three boys that would do the same thing. They'd come and tell me there'd be seven or eight taverns they'd stop in on the way home from.
Well, who else was crazy? Who else had a lot of fun? You remember anybody? No, Jimmy Fox.
You remember Cuckoo Christensen? He was an outfielder. He was a clown along with a ball player. Now, he had put on a show every day at the ballpark. Now, he was really clever. Back in our days when the inning was over, they'd throw the glove down on the floor, on the ground. When he'd go back to the outfield, instead of reaching over to pick up the glove, he'd turn a flip-flop and come up with the glove on his hand and stuff like that.
Did the players like that, or did they think he was...
Oh, yeah, they went along with that. You remember Nick Offerhoff and Al Shaff? Yeah, they were great. They entertained us most every day.
Mm-hmm. How about of your opponents? Who did you particularly respect?
Oh, a lot of them. I can't name them. I think Johnny Mize was the guy I respected more than anybody up at that plate. But I had more trouble with Johnny Mize than anybody. But Milwaukee, I was thinking I had them mixed up between the Cardinals and Columbus. But Joe Medwick was a tough guy to get along with. I mean, he was tough to pitch to.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned George Soucy. Was he your best pitcher or your best catcher over the years?
He wasn't the best catcher, but he done me the best job. My other two catchers in Milwaukee, when it come my turn, they were sick. They wouldn't, on account of the knuckleball.
That knuckleball made them sick.
Made them sick, but you can't blame them because it was tough to catch. I've broken many a catcher's finger.
But George let you throw it whenever you wanted?
No, they did.
How about George Soucy? Did he?
George come to me and he told me, he said, throw it any time you want to, whether I give you a signal or not. He said, I'll knock it down. May not catch it, but I'll stop it. He did a real good job.
How about at the major league level? Who was good at catching your knuckleball?
I think Babe Phelps is about as good as anybody in the major leagues. I had another boy in Milwaukee that after George left, he left. And Bill Brenzel, he used to be with Cleveland. He was a good catcher. Now, he was the type of catcher that I could just about tell what he was going to throw. A lot of times I'd be winding up when he'd still be giving a signal because I knew what he was going to call. Very good catcher.
We wanted to ask you about a couple of the opponents that you had in Pittsburgh. Tell us about Pie Trainer.
Pie Trainer? All I know about Pie Trainer is that his record shows him one of the greatest that ever lived, a third baseman. Never saw him play, but he was there while I was in the major leagues, and that's about all I can say about him.
Was he a good man?
Good, very good gentleman, a real gentleman.
Now, you also had some memories of Honest Wagner.
Oh, very much. I used to go to the ballpark. I could buy tobacco in Chicago that he couldn't get. Big old plug tobacco. And I'd always go to the ballpark and take him some plug tobacco, and we'd go out along the fence and sit down on the before game time or before the gates would open and talk. And I was a very good friend. I just often wish I had gotten more. Really, back when, in those days, I didn't realize that he was so great until later in years. I'd have loved to have had a picture taken with him, beside him. but I just like Babe Ruth. I never had a picture taken. I'd love to have had a picture with my arms around him or shaking hands with him, but he was just another ball player to me. I knew he was great, but that's about it.
You didn't know they would always be remembered.
No, I didn't know they'd be worth thousands after the years to come.
Did you enjoy life on the road as a major leaguer?
Not too much. I wasn't much on that traveling. I couldn't sleep on the train. I was up most of the night sitting in the washroom talking to the conductor or somebody. And the airplanes were no good for me. No way. The trip we took from St. Louis to Chicago, Dave Phelps and I went to the Leo DeRocher, the manager, said, "That's it. We won't go any farther." So he said, "Okay, I'll call McPhail in Brooklyn." McPhail was the president of the ball club. "See what he says." And so the next day he came to us. He said, "Well," he said, "you know what McPhail said?" I said, "No." He said, "If they don't want to fly, put them on a cattle car and send them home. And when they come home, come to the office." And Leo said, "You know what that means?" I said, "Yeah, I'm gone." He said, "That's for sure." Now he said, "Charlie, you'll have a little highball for you tomorrow night when we leave the ballpark." And he must have made a good one, because when I got out the airport, I was ready to drive that thing. But I never cared about the flying part.
Charlie, who was Charlie?
Charlie Dressen. One of the coaches.
Did you get along with Leo?
Oh, very well, very well. Leo was a good manager, but you've heard so many guys say he was no good, which possibly could be. But if you'd get in trouble out there on the mound, he'd come and he'd push somebody away to get to the guy, because he'd take over. He was good that way. But he was probably just like several other guys, no morals to them whatsoever.
Did the fans treat you well?
Very well. I had lots of friends around the whole league, especially in Crosley Field, Cincinnati. Every trip in there, I knew that there was a couple old women in the box seat, and I had to stop and talk to them, you know. Yeah, they were very nice.
How about the newspapers and the press? Did they treat you well?
Yeah, very well, very well. I never had much trouble with the sport writers.
Do you remember any of them being particularly good or good writers?
Not by name. I've never had done much, you know, enough to do with them to know what their names were.
What was your favorite season in the majors? Your favorite season?
Season? I suppose my first year up there was one of the best. I led the league in wins up until about July. I had 11-9. And Burley Grimes pulled a trick on me that I never had it done before. I was to pitch a second game in Boston. And I was sitting on the bench enjoying the first game. And we got in trouble in the seventh inning, and he come to me, he said, "Go to the bullpen." Why, Pertner fell over. You never heard of him relieving a man that's going to start the second ball game. Well, they beat me. We went in the clubhouse, I changed sweatshirts, and I really didn't think he was going to start me. Come to me and toss me a ball. He said, "Here, go out and see if you can lose this one." I went to Babe Phelps. I said, I was mad. I said, "I'm going to show that son of a bee how to lose a ball game." And I didn't go one inning. I told Babe, I said, "Don't give me any signals. I'm just going to pitch batting practice." And they had three runs in and I think two or three men on when he took me out. But I didn't care. I thought it was the worst deal that I ever had pulled on me.
How'd you do the rest of the way that year?
I didn't pitch much after that. I knew what they were after. If I'd have had a pretty good season, I'd have had more money. And they didn't want to do that, see. I knew the way they treated me from there on out, that I wasn't going to do. I finished up with 11 and 13.
What was your most memorable game?
I think probably the night that Vandermeer pitched his second no-hitter.
Tell us about that night.
Well, Babe Ruth was there that night. Matter of fact, that's the first night game in Brooklyn was that night, on June the 15th, 1938. And Max Butcher started the ball game. In the fourth inning, they had already had two or three runs off of him. And Leo put me in. And I went three and two-thirds innings. And I got hit on the kneecap with a line drive, and I left. And there was two other pitchers, Luke Hamlin and Vito Tamulis, pitched the last inning or so. I was out in the hospital when that happened. And I thought sure that I would, because I went down like a stuck horse. It paralyzed my leg. And they took me right to the hospital, and there was nothing broken, nothing cracked. It just hit a nerve. And the next day, I was out running in the Cincinnati Ball Club. They wouldn't believe it. Jimmy Wilson said I wouldn't believe it. But it wasn't hurt at all. Just it hit a nerve, and it paralyzed my leg. And that feeling started coming back shortly after I got out to the hospital.
Were you at the hospital when you found out that Vandermeer had thrown another no-hitter?
Yeah.
What was your response?
Now that it's over, I'm kind of glad, because that's history. That is history that will always be. My name is in the box score. And if you want to look at that box score, I was the only pitcher that went to bat. And I went to bat twice against him.
How'd you do? You didn't get
same as the other guys, nothing. But he was so wild. You were afraid. You were afraid to go to bat.
Did you think Vandermeer was really good that night when you were pitching against him?
No. He was just ordinary. Even in the last inning there, we had bases full with one man down. And I think Ernie Coy hit a drive right down to the third baseman. He threw the guy out at home. And Leo come up to bat and hit a little fly ball out center field. Ball game was over. Vandermeer walked about eight men that night. I know one inning he walked bases full. Didn't get out of that. That don't happen.
Did you like to hit?
Did I like to hit? I was a pretty good hitter. I don't mean a 300 hitter, but a couple of seasons I hit 200. I can show you some box scores where my base hit one ball game.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you ever hit any home runs?
No. I come close at Wrigley Field one day. I hit one that bounced off of that cement rail on left field. That's the closest I ever come to hitting a home run.
Did you like to hit?
Did I like to hit? Oh, I loved it, yeah. We used to go out early, and some of the outfielders would come out and they'd throw to us, and we'd hit until the regular team would start hitting.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Did you have a competition among the pitchers of who would
hit
best?
Oh, yeah.
What'd you do? How was the competition?
Some of them are pretty good hitters. Some of the pitchers are pretty good hitters. And they would be better hitters if they could hit every day. That's the only reason a pitcher isn't a good hitter. He only sees that man once every 4 days. Another thing I used to do all the time was hit the left fielder during infield practice. That was my job. I hit the left fielder all the time. And I really got good at that. I could make him go to a certain spot and I could hit a fly ball and he wouldn't have to take two steps.
And I could hit a ball that he could run 9 miles and couldn't quite just reach glove. But I used to bet to any guy on the ball club, I said, I'll bet any of you, that you can't stand out here on the baseline and hit 10 balls over the infield without pooping one. And they've all tried it, and it's something to do, to hit 10 straight balls to go clear over the infield, even though you just toss them up. And we used to have long-distance hitting with fungo bats. That Larry French was the longest fungo hitter I ever saw. He could stand at home plate, and I mean, he could hit Pertner over the center field roof in center field.
I wanted to ask you again about Milwaukee. Were you surprised when they got a major league team?
Yeah, I was, really. I really did. Of course, it was such a good franchise. I was pretty near sure that someday that it would happen. But they're really, really a good franchise. One of the best minor league franchises in the country at that time. Real good. Those old Polish people up there and Dutch people, they went day and night. I mean, they just loved their baseball.
Now, you had an opportunity to meet Bill Veeck.
Oh, yeah, Bill Veeck. Matter of fact, it was what I told he and Charlie Grimm in the hotel in Cincinnati, the reason they bought the Milwaukee Ball Club. They called me over one day and asked me what I thought of the Milwaukee franchise. And I told them, if they give them a ball club, it's one of the best franchises in the country. And that was good enough for them. I think they went that night and made the deal. That Charlie Grimm was a great book. He was a great man. He was a comedian too, you know. Very funny.
How about Bill Veeck?
Bill Veeck, yeah. Bill was a very, very nice man. Very nice man. Matter of fact, when I left Chicago for my last year, he called me. I told him before I left that I was through. I wouldn't be back. He called me at the Marathon Oil Company where I worked and just begged me to come back to Milwaukee. And I told him, I said, no, I think I've had enough of it, Bill. And I really believe that I made a mistake by not going with Bill, because I could have put it in my contract that I would come back if he would take me with him wherever he went, either as a coach. Mm-hmm. And you see how long I would have been in baseball. And I'm sure he would have went for it, because I was still good enough to win for him in Milwaukee.
Then you retired and you came back to Findlay.
I came back to Findlay and went right to work. It was the Ohio Oil at that time. And they were always good to me while I was playing ball. I'd come home and I'd go work in a filling station. I knew I'd come right home, go to work, and...
After you retired, what work did you do for them?
For Marathon. I made blended oil at the oil out of the blending plant. I made all their oils. I don't know, maybe 8,000-10,000 a day I would blend and pump it out into their tanks. And
did you like it?
Loved it.
Now, after you retired from the major leagues, you also played ball back here.
Right. Right. I came home and played... with Fostoria, little town east of here, 16 mile. They had a good ball club. Good ball club. We played every Sunday. I pitched no hitter over there one Sunday. And I went to Fort Wayne and pitched a ball game against one of the Fort Wayne teams. They always had good ball clubs up there. And after the game was over, the one guy wanted to know if I'd come and pitch for them. And I told him, no, you're too far away.
Now, how many years did you do that?
Oh, till I was probably 42 or 43, somewhere around there. Yeah.
What towns did you play against?
Lima, Toledo, Fort Wayne, Fostoria, Tiffin. That's about all the farther we would go.
Todd, we appreciate you spending so much time with us today. It's been a real pleasure.
I'm glad to do it. Glad to do it.
Thank you very much.
Talk to so many people. I get so many letters every day. I've gotten them all ever since you've gone, one or two a week. And I enjoy having anybody come. I have a lot of people in my den to see my belongings.
And the Brooklyn Dodger fans will never forget you.
Yeah, that old lady, I'll never forget her. She's the sweetest and the nicest writer. And she had to be 80 years old to remember me. And at the end of the letter, she said, Todd, you will never be forgotten. God bless you. It brought tears to my eyes, I'll tell you.